It's Tuesday, April 28th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 366 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Julia.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
First up, thank you guys for a successful Fear the Con Kickstarter. As of this recording, the Kickstarter has not only funded out, but it actually reached its one and only stretch goal of the Wing Knight. So for anyone that is coming to Fear the Con, I mean, there are going to be some things you have to pay for. It's fundamentally a free con. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely looking forward to that.
You have to pay for the right to wear pants.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Pants rental will be extremely expensive.
It will be.
Uh-huh. We'll be very gouging you.
You could almost say it would be prohibitively expensive.
That's what we're aiming for.
Mm-hmm. For
this
pants?
Is a
for
no pants con.
What about skirts?
No.
Too close. Too close.
Yeah.
It skirts the edge of the rules.
It does. Yeah, we don't want, yeah.
However, I will be bringing BOFA for free.
BOFA?
BOFA D's nuts. Yes.
No.
Full payoff.
No.
9 years of Fear the Boot. Fully worth it for a setup and knock down on a BOFA.
And the thing is,
we are out. Final episode.
Waiting 40 years to do it to me and 8 years to do it on Fear the Boot.
All right,
it's
Dan,
a long game.
You're not allowed to go to the con. Sorry.
The other thing is Chris.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
Chris has been doing an audio fiction show that I've been on. Wayne's on, Mikey Mason's on, there's a bunch of friends of the show, hosts, et cetera, that are on there.
I'm not on, so screw Chris.
Called.
He's never even asked me.
Wow. Hey, fist bump.
Yeah, screw right Chris. There.
No, you're on.
No, I'm not.
You're not? Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
fist
I'm
bump.
Not on.
No, solidarity.
Not on
yep.
All right. But anyway, it's called Gamers Behaving Badly, and right now he is working on getting together just a little bit of money to help fund a second season. I'll link to that in the show notes if you're interested in getting out there and supporting him, or if you at least want to just pledge a dollar so you can leave a nasty comment to him in the comment section, or perhaps put some form of pornography.
Mm.
I don't know why I'm not on there, because I behave badly.
Yes.
And I am a gamer.
Extremely.
It's a mystery.
Because the sound of texting while gaming is not really much of a sound. So
but it's behaving badly.
Yes, it is.
We could just add in like 15-20 seconds of silence.
Silence, yeah.
And there's just like in the YouTube version, just a graphic says Pat is looking at pornography. Yeah. And that's really all you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Chad, you had an introspective trip to a gaming store. Let's hear about this.
Yeah, so, you know, this is kind of a negative story, so we're not going to tell.
Don't be negging.
So we're not going to say the name of the store. Suffice to say, it's not Fantasy Shop.
Which is the chain that Brodor manages.
Right.
So this is not about Brodor's chain.
Yeah. In fact, if I would have had this problem, I would have called up Brodor standing in front of his employee. But no, I probably wouldn't. That would have been, I wouldn't have done that.
You would have done it later behind the employee's back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we really would have made
totally,
fun of him.
You would have totally sabotaged him.
That's the girl way of doing it.
Right.
Yes, that's
right.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You hit the nail on the head, sister.
Right. I did tell him I thought one of his employees was hot.
Well, that's
fair
normal.
Enough. Ted is kind of hot.
Was it a dude?
Yeah. But anyway, I went to this gaming store, and I was out and about, and it was a Sunday, so not exactly a whole lot of business getting pulled into a store on a late Sunday. And not that I'm doing them any favors, but whatever.
You're patroning their store.
Yeah.
Someone as famous and award-winning as you shopping.
Really?
I know, my entourage.
That's the problem. You did not wear your medal.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't roll in with my entourage.
You were going low-key.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm walking around, and I'm thinking, you know, I need a new game for family night, because we play...
Tiddlywinks is just not cutting anymore.
No. Well, Dawn and I played, much to Brodor's suggestion, we play Castle Panic. We play a lot of the Lego games. We play role-playing games. Sky loves him some Uno.
You tried BOFA?
You could suck D's nuts.
You know, that's twice now, and now he's doubly not.
He's doubly
excluded.
He's got to wear pants on his head.
That's your stretch goal, except for stretching both of them over the top of your head, is you're not going to the con. You poor bastards that bought Dan's package too f***ing bad. He'll have to go to his house.
So anyway, I'm walking around, and what do I do when I walk around a game store and I say, I need a new game for my young child. what would Bob Aarons do? Well, he would buy poo.
a game about monkeys throwing poop at each other. And you get to use whatever you want as to represent
all right,
poo.
Can I just
so we
this
choose
right here
chocolate
say,
chips.
What would Bob Aarons do?
Yeah.
Is a fascinating sort of nihilistic Schrodinger's experiment.
Yes.
But if you ever have the thought experiment go, for my child, what would Bob Aarons do? This is probably not the right way of thinking.
So I disagree.
But poo is a fun game.
Yes, poo is very fun. I've not
used chocolate chips.
It's like
poo.
What would Mikey Mason say right now?
Yeah,
great in many circumstances. If you're up behind the pulpit, not the time to ask that question.
Right.
So I find poo because I want to throw poo at my son, and there's nothing funnier than an 8-year-old throwing poo. So I pick it up. And I'm walking to the front, and I'm like, oh, it's only $10. And you know what? We really like Castle Panic, and Castle Panic has an expansion, the Wizard's Tower or something like that. And I couldn't find it. So I'm going to ask the guy if they have the expansion of Castle Panic. If they do, I'm going to buy that too. So now you're looking at, like, probably, you know, a $25, $30 spend here on a Sunday when there is the store is practically empty. And I had come in, and I had said hi to the guy and, you know, whatever, and I'd walked by and stuff. And so I'm standing there with this product in my hand by the counter, and he looks at me, and I think he's serving another customer. He's pulling magic cards out. They have these big doors and these sort of small closets with locks on them filled with magic cards. There's about 10 of them. They're metal cases that are about 5 foot tall, doors filled with stacks of cards. And he's pulling cards out of them, and I assume, like, he has a piece of paper, and I assume he's putting together cards for this guy. And, you know, they're talking about me, ha, 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 talking about magic. He sees me, and I kind of, like, wave my deck here, and I stand there. I stand there, and they're still talking and joking. And they're more, like, talking and joking. It's one thing to serve a customer, but it would take, like, 30 seconds to ring me out.
Yeah, ring the scout real quick.
Yeah, or he could say, hey, I'll be with you in a minute, or hey, you need some help, or hey, I got to take care of this guy. I got to put together this big order. Whatever. Total, like, looked at me, knew I was there, did not acknowledge my presence. So I stand there. I'm thinking to myself, what am I supposed to do here? You know, because I can be a real asshole. I mean, I could be a real, as you guys all know, I could be a real fucking asshole.
We know.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm like, do I do the finger snap thing? Do I say, hey, kid, check my ass out? But then I'm thinking, you know, it's not my job to correct and train their employees. Now, I'm not expecting white glove instantaneous service here. I'm not expecting him to drop everything he's doing. But I stood there for about, I gave him 5 minutes. And then I continued to, at 5 minutes, instead of saying something, I continued to think to myself, like, okay, well, what should I do here? And then I'm like, you know, I'm not going to train this kid. I'm not going to yell at him. I really don't feel like complaining. And I know there's a lot of people out there who'd be like, oh, well, you've got to complain. Nothing will ever change unless you say something or do something. But you know what? It's not my business. And there are other businesses that sell the same product that won't treat me like this. And so at about the 8-minute mark, I'm like, okay, no problem. No fuss, no muss, no drama. I walk over. I put my $10 purchase right exactly back where I found it. Didn't walk out with Castle Panic. They lost on a $25 spend on a Sunday when they're probably not making their quota. So whatever. I mean, it's not going to put them out of business, and I don't care. But the question is not like, what should you do in that situation or whatever. I think I was just overthinking it. It was more of a mental exercise for me. But I guess the question comes in, what is the expectation that we as sort of the gaming nerd geek public here hold for these kinds of stores, comic shops, role-playing game shops, mini shops, game shops? What is our expectation?
You know, it does seem like the geek community,
because if I go into a 7-Eleven to buy a hot dog, I don't have the same expectation.
Well, and that's right. Know? Yeah. And that's kind of what I was about to say here, is that it strikes me that our community has a somewhat high set of expectations that are also somewhat contradictory. Mm-hmm. Because we like the idea that you can walk into a game shop and everybody's really friendly and mm-hmm. attentive. We're a very, very, I don't say insular, but we're a community that loves our own. So if we walk into a geek store, it's important to us that the person selling us the products is also a geek. They know something about it. They can talk about it.
And it's not just a geek store.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Cigar shops are like that.
Yeah, well.
Wine shops are like that.
I was the bra specialist at Victoria's Secret because I knew everything about. I did. But I knew everything about the product I was selling. And my point to this is that I could be selling dog shit.
And I'm not going to that store.
Somebody should be teaching me or coaching me or whatever on how to sell that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, but I think it kind of goes beyond that, where it's not just we want them to know the product. I think we kind of want them to like the product.
We'll be enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, because that sense of acceptance, that sense of community, especially, I mean, I don't know if it's so much with, you know, much younger geeks where they have the whole geek chic thing going on. Right. But I mean, certainly if you're talking 30 and up, it seems like that's a pretty big expectation or pretty consistent expectation. But then at the same time, if you think about it, I mean, okay, in Chad's situation, the guy could have taken 30 seconds to just say, hey, let me ring this guy out real quick, check you out, and then going right back to talking to the dude. But there is a somewhat conflicting thing there, because if they really are going to know all the products and chat you up and have all these ideas and really want to get into those conversations, well, there is only a finite amount of attention.
Right.
So let's say it wasn't just you and one other guy.
Yeah.
Let's say that it was this guy buying what sounds like a custom magic deck.
Right. Probably a pretty decent amount of money he was putting down.
But let's say there was four other people in that store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the guy behind the counter, he can chat you all up or...
Yeah.
Well, he could be talking to Chad about magic as well while they're standing there, including him in the conversation. Like, I just know, again, I've worked retail for a long time and I was a manager. I trained employees. I was like a star employee. That's why I became a manager at 19. And my thing was that during Christmas, talk to people because it makes them feel better about staying in line for 20 minutes. You know, if you're talking to people, if you're showing that they're there, like acknowledging that you understand they're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a perfect
Right.
Well, let me ask you guys some questions. I agree with what you're saying, Julia, that, I mean, certainly there's a lot that could have been improved from a customer service standpoint. And I'm sure if Brodo was here, he'd
agree.
Yeah.
Or he would tell me, it's like, why didn't you effing say something?
Yeah. Well, I'd probably be like, why were you cheating on me and not going to fantasy shop? You dirty, diseased whore.
And then he would slap me in the mouth and I'd say, thank you.
But that is one. I mean, not to like, pimp Rotor shops, but every time I've ever been in a fantasy shop, I've gotten amazing customer service.
Every time recently. I mean, that was an effort they had to make to transform the customer service there. And I mean, he talked about that when he was on our show. And it as someone who lives here locally, you can tell.
Oh, it was night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been going to fantasy shop for
too long. It was total night and day. But here's my question. And obviously, everyone's listening is going to have their own opinion. Mm-hmm. We hope you'll stop by the forums and share them. But let me ask you guys at the table, when you walk into a store, in terms of just how the people that work there interact with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to talk about all the other aspects of the store, just that one thing. What is it you want? Because for me personally, and I realize I'm probably going to be the odd man out here, I want the people to be friendly, and that's really all I care about.
You're not going to be odd man out because I don't even want that.
I don't have a problem with people coming up and talking to me, but I typically already know what it is I'm after. Pick it up. Person be polite and friendly, you know, not be a jackass to me. But it seems like a lot of people that go into these stores want a little bit more than that out of that experience.
Well, I guess the question here, too, is what do you expect from a gaming store or comic books, a nerd shop, that you don't actually expect from any other kind of store?
Feeling like you're walking into somebody's house. That's what people, they want it to feel like they're walking into their best friend's basement to buy stuff, is how I feel. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does.
It does. I think I'd use a different word, which in terms of how I would look at a game store in comparison and contrast to any other store, the biggest thing that I want is simply a feeling of acceptance or not being judged.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, yeah. Sense.
I don't have to worry about that in most places, because most places I go, there's nothing socially awkward about buying a hamburger or picking up a pair of jeans or something like that. There's no stigma associated with that. And unfortunately, within a lot of game stores, The person behind the counter usually isn't a non-geek stigmatizing you so much as a judgmental fat beard. That's how I'd put it, Julie's acceptance.
Yeah, like you feel like you're at home when you go there. And so you feel, I talk to everybody, you guys know that. So like I'll walk into McDonald's and have a full conversation with the person behind the counter. Now, if I'm really good at judging whether somebody wants that. So if I walk in and they just look pissed off, I just leave them alone. But I love talking to people. And whenever I go into game stores, I know I'm always going to have a good conversation. And that's what I expect out of game stores. And I don't know if that makes any sense.
And what's weird for me, I'm very social. I will talk to anybody about anything, and I love people. I love talking to people. But when I go into a store, I buy my stuff and leave. I go to Trader Joe's a lot. There's a lot of snacks and stuff that Dawn and Sky and I like that are at Trader Joe's. And the prices are really good, so whatever. And the whole thing about Trader Joe's is that they are really freaking friendly.
Well, they're happy. I wouldn't even call it friendly. I would say that they're just always enthusiastic.
Yeah. It's a happy, upbeat place to work. Yeah, I think that's great. But when I go to check out, they're like, hey, so how's your weekend going, buddy? Yeah, got any great plans? And while they're checking you out, and that's cool. I think that's cool, except I don't want you as a friend. Yeah. I have friends who don't care about my weekend.
But you have to look at it from that person's perspective, too. They're going to be standing with you here in close proximity to them while they're ringing up your crap.
I get it.
They don't want it to be like really awkward where they're just staring at you.
Well, that's rough, too, because they got to... I mean, people that walk through the door are going to range everywhere from the super social to the people like me who, quite frankly, if there was just an automat where I could slip in my money, open the right door, Google automat if you don't know what one is, and take out my gaming book and a grilled cheese sandwich, I'd be okay with that. And if you're working retail, you have to somehow magically know be able to accommodate that entire spectrum.
Now, and with the Trader Joe's thing and with a really good gaming store thing, I get it. I mean, I think that's great. I think that is really spot on how you should train your employees. But I give, weekend's going great, thanks. And that's it, because that's just how I am. Like my neighbors, I don't talk to my neighbors either. I'm a terrible neighbor.
But did he stop after that? Or did he keep trying to make conversation with you?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
That's so contradictory to what you just said 5 minutes ago, because you're talking about how you want to talk. You'll talk to anybody. You'll break up a conversation. But when somebody does it to you, you don't like it, or just in that situation.
No, it's just that situation.
Because I actually don't have a problem with that. Like,
I'll talk to anybody.
Because they'll do that at Trader Joe's. They'll start talking to me, and I will have a conversation. Yeah. Or even at Deerberg's or the grocery store. It's just a local store.
They say something. I talk to hobos.
At the what?
I talk to hobos on my street.
I don't talk to hobos because they usually have shotguns.
And well, not out by me.
My God, that's such a good movie.
Oh, Rutger Hauer. Anyway, but yeah, it's like it's funny. I'm surprised that does bother you, because it doesn't bother me at all. It passes the time for me because they're not wasting time, because they're bringing the stuff
hands
up.
Mouth,
you know, they're
mouth,
not. They're not.
Cool,
you know, they're not like, oh, how about that movie? Yeah, so and so, and they're stopping doing it. It's like they're doing it. And I'm like, that's
cool.
Don't
get me wrong. When an employee tries to engage me in conversation, they're not doing something wrong. They're doing something right.
Oh, yeah.
You just personally don't.
You just don't. Yeah.
It's just not my.
See, I don't look at it like you're saying. I don't look at it as they're trying to become my friend. It's just it's just polite conversation. And
no,
it's fine.
Not. Yeah.
You know? Well, and I just remember from, like I said, working at Victoria's Secret, they used to like try to force us to sell credit cards. And that was like the most awkward thing. Like, that was like their one complaint about me ever. I think I sold like 600 bras in 3 weeks or something like that. I won like a huge Christmas tree. Anyway, it was a big thing. I was like the top seller in St. Louis at the time, and I had no credit cards. Mm-hmm. And they came to me and they're like, we need to coach you on credit cards. I'm like, you don't, because it's really awkward when I'm like fitting somebody and basically seeing somebody naked and me be like, you know what you should do is buy a credit card or get a credit card. You know, like, that is the conversations I don't like.
You know what you need to go with those beautiful titties, baby?
A credit card.
Victoria's Secret credit card.
You need a way to lower your credit score.
but
and increase your
fun, bantery, lightheartedness versus that I'm trying to sell you crap.
Well, and that's something I can separate, is I realize when I go into most places,
it's not their fault.
I'm maladjusted. And so I don't ever get mad at a place or at an employee for simply being friendly. Now, if I go to a place often enough, because, you know, they have their little routine, they'll oftentimes have a little punch list they have to go down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a Texas Roadhouse that I and a coworker go to almost every Friday.
Oh my God, we went into that Texas Roadhouse. And I walked in the door like I was leading, because I usually, when we go places, I walk so fast, I'm usually in front. And I walk in and they're like, hi, welcome to Texas Roadhouse. Would you like an appetizer? And I'm like, you haven't even seated us yet and you're already upselling.
Well, I know. I remember really? That because that's the last time we went as a group.
And I told
they tried
them
to
that.
Sell us a fucking Bloomin' Onion as we walked in the door. I'm like, we're not even set down yet.
Well,
would you like for us to put in your order for your Bloomin' Onion while you wait for your table? I'm like, no. Give me a fucking table and my peanuts, and I'll tell you what I want.
We've memorized.
Oh, my God.
My coworker, Hank, and I, we go there every Friday. For some reason, this place is only open for lunch on Friday. And
you have their script memorized?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'll walk in there, like, and they'll be like, hey, welcome to Texas Roadhouse. And I'll start going, yes, I've been here before. Yes, I'm familiar with this. Yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. No, I don't want that. But I am not interested in this, but I want
But
that.
I always manage to say it in such a way
that I don't come off as nasty.
It's not like being a total douche, just partially.
It's actually like, you know, it sounds funny more than anything
The worst thing you could do is you walk up to them, you put your finger on their mouth, and then you hand them an index card with all the answers on
that,
it.
That's what I would do.
Douchey right there.
No,
that's
you just go, shh, don't speak.
You'll ruin it.
I know what
you mean. But let me ask you guys a question.
Don't ruin it by speaking.
Let me ask you guys a question. And you don't have to answer it for yourself. I want you to talk about community perception here. All right. Mm-hmm. So how, in your contact with gamers, being a gamer yourself, having been to conventions, blah, 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 all your time in contact with other gamers, do you think that our community has expectations of the employees of a gaming store that go above and beyond what we would expect for most stores?
Yes, absolutely. Because you talk about, it's the friendly local neighborhood gaming store. Well, guess what? There isn't the friendly local Taco Bell.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
People want this extra level of knowledge. They want this extra level of service. Like you guys said, they don't want to be judged, even if they're not going to be judged in Taco Bell either.
Well, it's also the trading of knowledge, too, that we expect. So not only, like, so I may walk into a fantasy shop and talk to somebody who doesn't know anything about role-playing games but knows a load about comic books, and I don't know a lot about that. So it's also like an exchange. So I'd be like, hey, I want this, the latest D&D, whatever new thing came out. Nice. And they're like, oh, I haven't played this. How is it? You know, so I think it's also like an exchange of knowledge at gaming stores. So you expect to go in and this person know more about things than you, but you also probably know something. I don't know. That's kind of how I feel when I go into gaming stores.
Mm-hmm. So moving away from gaming stores, the other topic we want to talk about today also deals with expectations, but we're now moving to another subject matter here, which is the expectations that we have from a game company. All right, so from the people that write and publish role-playing games. We're not going to deal with distribution, because if anyone has expectations out of their distributor, that's I'd be interested in hearing that, especially if you don't own a store. But, okay.
Diamond Distributing.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Especially for comics.
That's... Yeah, they have a monopoly, and it is an absolute monopoly that the government does not give one crap about because it's comic books.
Yeah. So what are the expectations that we have from game companies? What is it that we expect them to do in order to make the entire relationship worthwhile? And I'm going to start with one that I've talked about before. It's a real simple one. It's a production level item. I've got some that aren't production level. But this one's a real simple production level item, which is I expect you to make your stuff accessible. That could be an appendix of charts on the back. That definitely ought to include an index. But I expect not just in the book I picked up, but anything you're going to give me to supplement that, your information has to be rapidly accessible to me, because if I'm going to use this to play a game, it is inconducive to my games to be stopping to dig through your stuff. And so therefore you, since you're trying to help be conducive to my gaming, ought to make it easy to find.
Well, do you want realistic expectations or the unrealistic expectations?
How unrealistic are we talking?
Because what I consider to be an unrealistic expectation that a lot of gamers seem to voice over and over and over again is the cost of the product. They want these products to be practically free, and people don't understand that artists cost money. Writers cost money. Editors cost money. Graphic designers and layout people cost money. Types are, they all cost money.
Well, one thing that also kicks that in the nuts is the economy of scale.
Yeah.
Because most RPG books circulate on such a small scale, you don't have millions of books out there. You can split that across and say, well, if I only make a buck profit off each one, I can still recoup what I lost.
And
I
mean, people have really very bad views of the values of money. They'll spend 18, 20 bucks on $30 on a night at the movies if they're taking somebody out with them. They'll spend $60 on a video game. But the night at the movies lasts, 4 or 5 hours? A video game lasts 8 hours? They think that $25 for a gaming book is an outrageous expense, and they'll play it for the next 10 years.
Well, that's why I know this is blasphemy, but I prefer digital copies. I just do.
Well, I don't have a problem.
All my friends think I'm nuts, but crazy. I like to be able to have my tablet instead of a huge laptop or a huge book in front of me. Space is usually a commodity at our gaming table. So I like having digital versions. So I know that cuts back on some of the cost, at least the actual physical production.
Well, but the printing of the book is not the main. Okay, so I'm probably going to have a whole bunch of industry people railing at me, telling me I'm wrong. But my understanding is the expense of making a book is not in the printing of it. The expense of the book is in basically paying this whole team of people to create this product that you love and use all the time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the printing costs are going to vary because having done Sojourn, all this stuff now, and I can actually speak to these costs somewhat. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I at least don't have to get myself in trouble. And thinking through the costs, yeah, printing costs can be substantial, but you are correct. Yeah. Especially when you're working on such tight margins to begin with, because of the fact that you want this to be a saleable price. So, I mean, let's say, for example, that printing costs are 40-50% of the book's price. If you take that away, I mean, yeah, obviously you can bring the price of the book down.
Yeah.
But the distributor, which could be DriveThruRPG, whatever, they're going to take some kind of a cut of that. Depending on the outlet, may or may not be significant. You still obviously have the cost of the layout, the rules design, the editing, the art, all that kind of stuff.
Well, and I know that, and I could be wrong, so I apologize, but I thought that Kirk told me that when he bought the Werewolf Apocalypse 20th Anniversary Edition book, he got the digital copy included.
Well, that was going to be a possible thing we could talk about here.
Yeah.
Is if you're dealing with a company, is the portability of the content? And by portability, I don't mean that in the more typical sense that you can pick it up and move it around. I mean portability in the technical sense, which means you have it in many places. So if you go out and buy a book, do you expect to have a book, to have a PDF, to have a rules like resource wiki or something like that, like what the D20 SRD does? And I'll link that in the show notes for anyone who's never heard of the D20 SRD.
I love that thing. It saves me time.
It's like a web page version of the book. So is that something you expect from your publishers of, let me get your content in a variety of ways?
Yes, 100%. I mean, and I'm one of those people, I don't care to buy the book for $65 especially if I get a digital copy as well, because I love the nostalgia to have the book and I like having it in general. But having to lug books around other people's houses, or, you know, having risk of stuff getting spilt on them or whatever, because I'm a very clean person, so I like my books to be clean, the digital version is just so much easier for me. And then having the resources to be able to look it up. I know that the SRD probably loses money for them because you don't have to buy all the supplement books to get the content. So it's probably a little bit of a money sucker. But at the same time, somebody who plays D&D as often as I do, it's great. Because I don't have to get out 10 books to find these spells that I need. They're in 10 different books. And that's another complaint I have, though, is that their modules, I wish they just put out a supplement. I wish they just put one out for spells and just one for feats, and not like a themed one that has like 10 spells and like 10 feats. And then now I'm like having to buy
splat books. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, and I think that kind of ties back to what I was talking about with accessibility. Make these books the way that they're going to be used in play.
Right.
If you sell the book, maybe that's the question, is who are you selling the book to? Because if you sell it to a player and the player's like, you know, I love always playing Wizards, so I'm going to go out and get the Wizard splat book, is one way. But when you actually get down to playing the game and it's like, well, I got a spell. Well, where'd you get it from? Well, it could be the setting source book. It could have been the Wizard source book. It could have been the Wizard Part 2 source book.
Right. Yeah.
Well, at this point, it's a technology question. You need a wiki.
Well, right.
Right.
You need the wiki, the SRD is actually, is the better way to go, because for everybody involved, for the publisher as well as the consumer, because what you can do is you've added a new class. It's easy. You don't, you know, it's not a matter of, oh, they've got this other book and it's all, you know, we can't fit it in. it's on an SRD. It just literally, you put the page in and you have the links and it's there.
I've wondered about.
It's so easy, you know.
I can't think of anyone that's doing this. Maybe there's somebody out there and I'm just not thinking of it. Somebody that sells a game on a subscription basis where it's like $5 a month or something. But for $5, you get access to a wiki that has everything.
Sure.
You have a username, password, account, blah, 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 recurring billing on PayPal. I don't know what the setup is here exactly. But when we put out a new supplement or new splat book, or we revise to a second edition, it's
on us.
Exactly. You either pay for your login or you don't, just like an MMO.
Sounds like a better Patreon model there, because what I would hate is, okay, I pay you $5 and then you guys get into a dry spell. I don't like your new edition, sure, or whatever. Yeah. Even you guys are producing great stuff, and I run my campaign, and now my group wants to play Shadowrun and I want to eat a bullet. So...
Well, I mean, you'd have to have...
I'm going to have to dig around and find, like, edible bullets. Like,
actually, yes. Speaking on the SRD side of things, Shadowrun put on an anniversary edition that put in the index
30 years
what
of suck.
Other books things were in.
Oh, yeah, I remember
And it was
that.
Amazing. So we'd be looking for equipment, and you can look in the back, and it would say, hey, it was in, you know, this book. Or
and, you know, that's
book.
Actually not a bad idea. It's a super index.
Yes.
An index, and you could even put this online completely free. Search an idea or whatever, and it tells you, okay, this is in this book, this is in that book, this is in that book. But yeah, the super index, you're right, they did do that, and that was really awesome.
Maybe, yeah, I loved it.
Maybe your game is too big and has too much cruft. If you need a book that is just an index of the indexes.
You know,
the
I just needed to know where all the implants are. You know, it's just easier.
They're in the chest.
No, I should have used a different word.
Yes.
So yeah, he put his phone down. Now he's paying attention. So
I said implants.
What you say.
I should just start throwing out keywords like that to get him to pay attention. Huh? Yeah.
Just breakthrough was that the reticular filter, whatever it's called. For anyone's not familiar, that's the idea that you can tune out a room full of conversation, but the minute somebody says your name, it has your attention. Right. That's called the reticular filter. But let me throw out another one here. This is not one that's really big within our group, but this is a complaint that I've heard from a lot of people. And so I think we'd be remiss not to mention it, which is in terms of supporting the game, a lot of companies don't seem to go as far as the fans would like in terms of presenting game ideas. Now, these could be things like a collection of plot hooks, or it could be outright modules.
Blech.
That was something that I've heard a lot of from people that consume games back when Tex and I were writing for Fast and AWOL. That was one of the things they specifically asked us for more of, was more scenarios, more.
Not how I play role playing.
I know.
And I don't mean the module thing, but like the previous conversation and this conversation, it's like, because we're Fear the Boot and we decide what people want and what they want out of things, so we're declaring what everyone wants out of these products. It just seems to me everybody wants more. So you pick one game, Shadowrun or Battletech or D&D or Eclipse Phase or it doesn't matter what. Pick one game. What does the consumer want? They want more. They want more stuff. They want more story. They want more characters. They want more world building. They want more guns. They want more charts. They want more rules. They want more everything. More and more and more. And that is really not how I game. I like to build my own games, my own settings and stuff. And everybody knows that, whatever. But I don't have a problem with other settings and other books and other rules. I just don't want 20 books. I want one rather well-written book.
You know, I'm muddling that out in my head right now.
I'll make everything else.
Because certainly, back in the RPG boom of the late 80s and early 90s, the battle cry was definitely more.
Right.
I want books about this, books about that, rules for this, extra charts for that. I don't know if that's quite as big of a push as it once was. I mean, even thinking about the games that are expansion heavy, I mean, it seems like the product runs for D&D, Battletech, Shadowrun, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they're not nearly what they once were.
I'm not a Savage Worlds fan, but I like what Savage Worlds does in that they don't release Savage Worlds guns book, Savage Worlds more rules book, Savage Worlds the 300 book page of charts. It's here's a setting and we apply the Savage Worlds rules to it.
Yeah.
Like here's Solomon Kane, the book. Here is the new one that Chris Mays gave us, Riff's Savage Worlds book. Here is Cowboys and Savage Worlds. So if you really like Savage Worlds, you don't need a Solomon Kane book and then 20 or 30 more Solomon Kane books. You just need the one book.
Yeah, well, and that's...
I think they're sort of going that way. I mean, Shadowrun, the newest edition is... Well, not the brand new one, but the fourth edition, is that what they were on?
I think the anniversary one was fourth.
Okay, so the fourth edition only had two expansion books, and they were... I mean, they had a lot of what the core book had, plus some in charts and organized differently. And I think that, I feel, is what they're going more towards. Exalted is a whole other bag of crazy.
Sure.
But they kind of did the same thing where their supplementary books had the stuff from the core book just organized nicely.
Yeah.
Because it was a whole weapons book.
Well, here's the thing about modules, though. So looping back to that, why I think modules kind of sit in a category of their own is because most of what we've been talking about here in terms of more and more and more, which just makes me think of that Captain Hollywood song for some reason. I'll link that in the show notes.
More and more and more.
But I don't know why.
It's a lot better than that song we came up with.
Yeah. Earlier.
Yeah. Well,
no, it's not.
The harmonized penises.
Penis.
So modules are different, though, from the other kind of source books, because the other source books are like plaque on your teeth. They just kind of get there and stay there. You know, if you go out and you buy the main source book and then you buy the source book of more stuff and then you buy the source book of additional setting, it just kind of keeps adding on to the luggage of what it takes to play that game.
Right.
But a module, on the other hand, you play it, you might hang on to it for reference, for inspiration. Maybe it had a neat idea you want to adapt somewhere else. But for the most part, it gets tucked away as a reference book and forgotten about until that one moment you need it for something. It doesn't really add to the stack of what you're playing. I mean, Chad, think of it this way, with your Solomon Kane thing. Yeah. I could give you one Savage World Solomon Kane book, and this is the only rule book we ever have.
We got characters, we got combat, we got story,
but
we got
each week I come in with a different module.
Right.
We run that module, then the module's put aside and done with.
Yeah.
You know, we move on, we don't touch it again.
It is more, but it's a very ephemeral more. It's a momentary more.
Yeah.
It's there and it's gone, and I can deal with that.
Yeah, and also, I know modules aren't a real big thing within our group, but talking to people that are in the larger role-playing companies, I mean, they say that is consistently one of the requests they get is for specifically more modules, more plot ideas. And so I feel like I couldn't simply not mention it.
I think my problem with modules is my problem with the concept of more, more, more. It's not that it's just putting up a lot of stuff. I mean, I do want to kind of live a more minimalist life, but... And I don't want this huge collection of role-playing games where 90% of it I never even touch. My basic problem with the whole thing is, okay, you buy a role-playing game, you like the setting and you like the rules, and you're going down this path, and then they keep feeding you more stuff. Well, when are you going to stop letting them think for you and you think for yourself? When are you going to come up with your own ideas and add to this seed of this sort of core book, these core kind of, again, character creation, lore, fluff, the world, combat, whatever, blah, 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 everything that is a basic role-playing game book.
Thank gosh my brother doesn't listen, but my brother would never be able to come up with his own ideas.
Right.
So there are people and out there people, who can't, but he likes to run games.
Some people don't have time.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, I get that. I understand. I mean, I'm not totally obtuse to it, but still, the whole concept of a role-playing game is about imagination, and it's about thoughts and ideas.
Well, and we might come back to that one, because as we've been talking about these expectations both before the show and now during the show, I'm thinking there might be kind of a little on and off series here. And one of the ones I want to come back to is, what is your expectations if someone's running a module? And because I actually have some ideas on, even within our preferred style of role-playing, how you could make one work. So putting that one aside from it, let me give you guys another one here.
I'm very Gygaxian in my thoughts. People think that I'm hippie and I'm really crazy and I'm kind of, you just got to think of all this stuff for yourself. Read Gary Gygax's book, Master Game Master, once you stop laughing about the ridiculous title. And he goes into it. He talks about what his intention and his idea of a role-playing game is that you play somebody's role-playing game, specifically D&D, because he wrote it, but anybody's role-playing game. So you get the idea of it, and then you start adding on it, and then you start making house rules, because you have to make the game work for you and your players, because those people in that office many states away writing this great book that you love and doing a wonderful job on it are not in your house. So you have to make those customizations, and as you make those, you build on that, and you're like, well, I can make my own rules, and I have an idea for my own setting. And then it's not just a light switch you flip and then suddenly you're producing all this stuff, but it's this slow evolution. And to him, that's the natural order of gaming, is not buying tons and tons and tons and tons of products somebody else produced. His idea is you buy the stuff, you get the ideas, and then you start going down your own path.
All right, let me ask you guys another one. And I'm going to take a few answers off the table because there's some predictable answers here that I think are also a little bit cheap. So I'm going to pull them off the table.
Shadowrun sucks.
Excuse me. You have insulted me, sir. No, I'm just kidding.
Now she demands satisfaction.
Yes.
She's getting out a white glove. She's going to slap my mouth.
Yeah, good thing I moved the guns out of here. I had to move
good thing the dueling pistols are in the shop. I'd be fucking dead.
No, I'm just actually, I do love Shadowrun, but
I had to move it. I was only willing to keep the shotgun in here because of one basic truth. I didn't own any ammunition for it. So I could guarantee that it was always unloaded. But now that I own ammunition for it, I feel
you
like
have to
be a little more responsible
safely.
With yes. it. Yeah.
And then you have all these toddlers running around. Yes. Too.
But so my question here that I was getting to is, should a role-playing company, do you expect them to listen to their fans? So let me take some easy answers off the table.
Isn't that how D&D Next was created? Through fan input?
Arguably. There's a lot of input. Right. Okay. But what I want to take off the table is the obvious truth, which is if you look at any audience or anything, almost every opinion is going to be represented. Everybody's going to want something out of it. You can't do it all. And if you try to do it all, you create this great big chimera of a product that really doesn't satisfy anybody. I get that. But let's say we're talking about the bell curve of what your fans are looking for. A great example I can give you this, once again, going back to my has-been years with FASA, was when they were making the transition towards kind of, I don't say dumbing down, but younging down the product, where they were going for the trading card game and they had the cartoon and they were upping the power level. There were several of us that, you know, had a direct line to them that kind of told them, hey, guys, this is a bad direction for the game. You know, those of us that have been your longtime fans, this really isn't what we want to see out of the game. And obviously they opted not to listen to us. I mean, for anyone who knows kind of the...
Did they know that they were listening to Fear the Boot? I mean, look what happened to them.
I mean, they should have been having like premonitions and dreams, mm-hmm. signs yes. and portents.
Well, that's how you visited them. You didn't actually know any of them. You just appeared in their dreams as a shadowy figure with a skull for a face.
And sometimes is one of the founding fathers, usually John Jay.
Why John Jay?
I don't know. Federalist Papers or something.
Blah, blah, blah. Federalist Papers, blah, blah, blah. Don't f*** up Battletech.
Yeah, exactly.
Out. Honey, I had the weirdest dream.
But do you think if you have to pick one side or the other, okay, no weasel, mealy mouth waffling in the middle. If you have to pick one side or the other, do you think people should say, no, this is my art, consume it or don't? And obviously the business models, if people don't consume it, you out of business. All right, but let's just talk about this in the abstract moral desire, whatever sense here. Should people follow their own sense of art, or should they step back from that a bit and adapt to what their fans want? Which one would you prefer a game company to do?
Stick with their art.
So you prefer them to lead as opposed to listen, which is not, right. I don't mean to use loaded words there, but okay.
Yeah.
So lead or listen?
Which one did I do? I wrote two games from my heart. I didn't get input from anybody.
No, you did playtest them and ask for, but no, predominantly, yes.
Predominantly. Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't do a Kevin Symbieta and
it was certainly
in underground bunker and get no input from anybody.
Doing mushrooms.
Yeah.
See, it was, okay, it was 75 to 90% lead over listen. Yeah. You did do some listening, but okay.
The majority lead. And I say majority because I think there's going to have to be some amount of
because
listening.
People are idiots.
You know, but I mean, the majority should be lead in any IP that we're talking about.
Right. I'm going to actually go the other route here and say that I certainly think they have to take some amount of leadership to maintain artistic integrity and vision. And sometimes, quite frankly, people ask for things they don't fully understand the implications of. One of the things they repeatedly asked FASA for and FASA refused to give them, and I'm glad they did, was rules for the 110-ton mech. For anyone who's not familiar with Battletech, mechs have a maximum weight that determines how much equipment they can carry. And a lot of people kept wanting them to up that for more and more munchkin-y mechs, which I'm glad they didn't do.
Why not just have a tower that is immobile? and cover yeah, that's guns. 110
mech. Yeah, exactly. Why not just come up with your own rules for a single control center for a drop ship and then turn the landing gear into like legs or something?
Yeah.
But still, if they stick to what if they stick to their art, you're always going to get good product.
Not always.
Not always. Well, let me read that. The best that they can give you. But what you run into as well is
you know, because what the three of us said is that, you know, we want them to stick to their art. You know, stick to what you're doing to put out a unique product as opposed to having it regurgitated from your fans. Say we want it this way. That is very idealistic. That's what we want. But in realism, that's not going to happen because, like Dan said, a lot of these are going to go out and they're going to fail because no one's going to buy it. Because your idea, that you love, no one else does.
Well, also to be blunt here on both sides of the equation, on the lead side, a lot of artists start off with a good idea and then go completely off the ranch.
George Lucas. I'm sorry. What was
that? Yeah, or start off the ranch and have some good ideas somewhere in the rough.
I like THX-1138.
That's not Star Wars. We're not talking about TH whatever the fuck.
THX.
We're talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3 that I am now watching with my 8-year-old son. I'm like, oh my fucking God. I've only seen them like once.
Right.
You know, way back when they came out and I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then in the years since, I haven't watched them like, oh, it's fucking painful.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is it's certain aspects of it. Mm-hmm. The aspects that every fucking Star Wars fan hates.
Yeah.
Is what's really, really bad. Jar Jar Binks, the love story, the dialogue that Lucas wrote is fucking horrible. Now the other stuff, you know, the some of the battle scenes and basically everything that Obi-Wan does is pretty fucking cool. What were we talking about before I went off the rails?
Listen, Lee. So the problem with lead is sometimes the
people let George Lucas make a movie. Except now when you've turned over to J.J. Abrams.
The problem with listen is that not only can you
that I don't do it
a confused vision for the product, but I think a lot of times there's this presupposition that the person who's talking has a sense for where this should go. Like they and the developers of the game are kind of on the same page. Like they get it, right? There's obviously problems with both, but I'm going to go against the table here and say that if I had to pick one or the other, well, I certainly think you need to maintain some creative parameters and some kind of a unifying vision. I would actually go down the listen side and say that if you're looking at what you need to work on in the rules, which part of the setting to expand, what to play up and what to play down, I would say that I think the 51% should be on the listen side.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Dan. Are you saying that because thinking that if they just listen to me, then it will be great? But what I mean by that is if you're listening to the masses, do you think you're going to still get the game that you like? Because your opinion will be part of that, but it's maybe not the majority vote.
Yes and no. Okay, now I certainly accept that in the listen side of things, I don't have a special key into the developers of the game.
Yeah.
It's very possible that I could get outvoted on everything I'm after. This happens to me every time I get an MMO survey. Whatever I pick is almost invariably in the bottom two or three choices when they release the results. So I get that and I accept that. But here's the thing about role-playing games is they are very much, and I believe more than any other form of entertainment, a shared experience, right? The people that run the game in some ways own the game as much as the people that created the game. I mean, not in a literal legal sense. I don't mean that. But I just mean that, you know, they have invested something into taking this game and fleshing it out beyond what was written already. You know, adding their own rules, tweaking the setting, expanding things.
They can write their own game. That's what I did. And then I gave it away. I wrote my own game.
And there's an order of operations too. If you think about it, you create what the people want, and then you make whatever the heck you want, and they'll buy it because they're already buying your first product.
You know, I had mentioned this on the show before, and it's long history, and I don't think I brought it up in any recent time. I was at a convention on a panel with, I think his name is Michael Bain. I forget what his first name is, of Bain Books. He's unfortunately dead now. You know, famous publisher of military sci-fi and many other kinds of books. If you ever read a Isaac Asimov book, it was probably a Bain imprint. And I'd asked him a couple of questions. I asked him, if you're a writer, what should you write? Should you write what the publisher is wanting you to write, or should you write what the fans are writing, like basically what is popular right now and what the fans are wanting you to write, or should you write what you want to write, what's kind of coming from your heart and what's inside of you? And he said, you have to write what's coming from inside of you. Because if you're writing to order to what the fans want, and this is, I don't mean somebody hiring you to write something. I mean, because there's a lot of writers who work on commission and who are paid to write something. I'm talking about the like a whole project, a mm-hmm. whole big, gigantic thing. Like the team consensus comes together and they create this art and put it out. You have to do that. Because if you're just pandering to what the fans want, they're going to be able to tell. When you write, you put that fire into it.
Well, right. And I think that's what I was talking about with still keeping a measurable minority of lead in there, because you have to have that unified vision. There's a difference, I guess, between listening and pandering. Mm. And I certainly would not expect anyone to write outside of their comfort zones or passion.
But there's nothing wrong with focus groups and questions.
No, right. And that's the thing, I think, that role-playing games...
Writing in a vacuum is horrible.
Right. Well, and let's say that novels, okay, write a novel mm-hmm. only tells one story, whatever that story is. You know, I mean, it's telling one narrative. A role-playing game book provides parameters for many narratives. Now, you may or may not have a singular setting narrative that is somewhere behind that. You know, like Dragonlance had one, but not all settings do. You know, sometimes it's kind of like, well, here's the setting and go do with that what you will. And yeah, I mean, certainly, yeah, you have to keep some kind of focus. You have to keep the passion there. I don't think you should design your game purely by vote, but I don't think, however, that rules out the idea that what the people want can be still be a major driving force for where you go in that exploration of something you're passionate about. In my own creative career, I found times that people ask questions about things. Sometimes it gets me thinking about material that I hadn't even realized I'd hit upon. I've had this a few times where I'm writing a character, and this could be role-playing game, prose, whatever, and I find somebody who understands a character or plot element better than I did. And if I had simply been kind of just going where I wanted with that, I would have just walked right around that. Most recent example was I was reading a deconstruction between Ryan Friedrich and a friend of his on Gnarl. And I think at some level he gets the character better than I do. And I mean that in the non-comedic sense of what he's like, you know, actually as a developed character, not just sort of the cartoonishly violent thing that I'm doing on Twitter for him. And it's like, you know, if I hadn't stopped to listen to that, there's things about the character that I would have missed. But I don't know. I don't want to drive this particular point to the ground. But
too late.
But my question here still stands, and I would love to hear what you guys have to say, you know, on the forums or on the front page or whatever, of what do you expect from a game company? If you're going to start picking up their products, become a fan of them, become a fan of Angelus, tell just you're just giving your hard-earned money for their products. What are the things that you expect from them? What are the things you want them to do to keep you as a customer? And I've got some ideas for talking about expectations in other areas of gaming and where maybe our expectations as gamers might be a little bit off. But we'll come back to that in later episodes here at some point. So once again, Chris's Kickstarter, I'll link that in the show notes. Thanks again for everything with Fear the Con. We're looking forward to having that here. And I guess it's about 2 months away?
Yeah.
May, June? Yeah. 2 months away about, at least as of this recording.
A little less than. Well, and depending on when this drops, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.